Three destroyers, one choke point, two official stories, and a ceasefire that may still exist on paper, even as missiles, drones, and small boats turn the Strait of Hormuz into a live test of power. Good evening. This is The Synthetic Lens. I'm David Carver. Tonight, Hormuz, under fire. U.S. Central Command says three American-guided missile destroyers, the USS Truxtun, the USS Rafael Peralta, and the USS Mason, came under attack on May 7th while transiting the Strait of Hormuz toward the Gulf of Oman. CENTCOM says Iranian forces launched multiple missiles, drones, and small boats. Iran disputes the trigger. Reuters and Al Jazeera report Iranian claims that the United States violated the ceasefire first by targeting an Iranian oil tanker and another vessel entering Hormuz and by striking civilian areas. Those Iranian claims have not been independently verified. CENTCOM's account has not been independently verified in every battlefield detail either. That is the first thing to keep clear tonight. We are dealing with competing official narratives in a contested military environment. But the broader fact pattern is hard to dismiss. The ceasefire is under severe pressure. The world's most important energy choke point is now the scene of renewed direct U.S.-Iran fighting. And the core question is no longer simply whether ships can pass. It is who gets to define lawful passage through Hormuz.
With me tonight are Elena Vasquez on geopolitics, James Okafor on security and conflict, and Ingrid Halvorsen on energy and sanctions. Elena, start with the frame. This is not just another exchange of fire in a narrow waterway, is it?
No. The Strait of Hormuz is geography, but it is also authority. Iran has been signaling that transit depends on Iranian permission, corridors, and rules. The United States has been signaling that freedom of navigation cannot be subject to an Iranian veto. So when U.S. destroyers move through Hormuz and CENTCOM says Iranian forces attack them, the fight is not only tactical. It is a sovereignty dispute at sea.
This is less a clean ceasefire violation than a sovereignty crisis unfolding in real time.
That's right. The ceasefire was already fragile because the hardest issue was never fully resolved. Washington wanted the strait reopened in a way that restored commercial movement. Tehran wanted leverage over the waterway and recognition that Iran could regulate access near its coast and ports. You can pause missile fire for a time, but if both sides still claim the right to control the same operating space, the conflict is waiting for a trigger.
And now each side says the other side pulled it.
Yes. CENTCOM says Iranian missiles, drones, and small boats targeted U.S. destroyers during transit. Iran says the United States violated the ceasefire first by targeting Iranian-linked vessels and civilian areas. Reuters is careful here. Renewed hostilities have thrown the ceasefire into doubt and put it under pressure.
Which is not the same as saying the ceasefire is formally over.
Exactly. We should not say that unless there is an official statement or clear diplomatic break. But a ceasefire can survive in language while failing in practice.
The diplomacy was still active while this happened.
And that may be the most dangerous part. Reuters reports Iran was reviewing a U.S. proposal or framework aimed at ending the war, resolving the Hormuz crisis, and opening a 30-day negotiation window. But that proposal reportedly leaves some of the hardest issues for later. Enrichment, sanctions, ballistic missiles, guarantees about the war, and regional fronts. So the military exchange is happening while negotiators are trying to decide whether there is enough of a framework to keep talking.
James, let's turn to the military picture. CENTCOM named three destroyers, Truxtun, Rafael Peralta, and Mason. What should listeners understand about the kind of attack CENTCOM is describing?
These are Arleigh Burke-class guided missile destroyers. In this context, their job is air defense, missile defense, surface warfare, command integration, and escort presence. If CENTCOM's account is accurate, the threat package was mixed: missiles, drones, and small boats. That is important because mixed attacks are designed to complicate defensive timelines.
Explain that without the Pentagon vocabulary.
A missile moves fast and forces immediate air defense decisions. A drone may be slower, but can distract sensors, probe defenses, or provide targeting information. Small boats add the surface threat, close, maneuverable, and politically dangerous because engaging them can escalate quickly. None of those categories is new in the Gulf. What matters is the combination and the location.
CENTCOM says no U.S. assets were struck.
That is the U.S. claim, and it matters. We should not convert that into broader certainty. We are not confirming every damage claim or every strike effect. We can say CENTCOM reports no U.S. assets were struck, while Iranian claims of damage to American ships have not been independently verified.
CENTCOM also says the United States struck Iranian launch sites, command and control locations, and ISR nodes. What does that tell you?
It tells me the U.S. response was not limited to shooting down inbound threats. If the CENTCOM statement is accurate, U.S. forces went after the network that enables attacks, launchers, command links, and surveillance or targeting infrastructure.
So, not just intercepting arrows, but going after the archer.
Exactly. That is standard military logic. But it is also escalatory because the exchange moves from defense at sea to strikes on Iranian military infrastructure.
And Iran's counterclaim is that U.S. action came first.
Correct. Iran says the U.S. targeted an Iranian oil tanker and another vessel entering Hormuz and says civilian areas were struck. Reuters and Al Jazeera report those claims. They are not independently verified based on the material we have, but they are politically significant because Iran is asserting legal and moral justification for its own response.
The operational question becomes, can either side keep escalation bounded?
That's the central question. Hormuz is a terrible place for ambiguous escalation. It is narrow, crowded, economically vital, and militarized. Small boats, drones, tankers, destroyers, aircraft, mines, shore-based missiles, and electronic warfare can all interact in one compressed space. A misread track or an unconfirmed strike claim can become policy before diplomats have time to correct it.
Elena, this connects to the timeline. April 8th, the ceasefire and peace process. Mid-April, CENTCOM mine clearance and a blockade related to Iranian ports and coastal areas. May 3rd and 4th, Project Freedom to restore commercial shipping through Hormuz.
Then, May 5th, MERA reports Iran launching a permit or corridor system and the IRGC warning ships to use designated routes. May 6th, CENTCOM says U.S. forces disabled the rudder of the Iranian-flagged unladen tanker MT Hasna after it ignored warnings and attempted to sail toward an Iranian port. Then, May 7th, this exchange.
So the clash was not isolated.
No, each step narrowed the space for compromise. The U.S. position hardened around reopening transit and enforcing the blockade. Iran's position hardened around permission, corridors, and claimed authority in the strait. By May 7th, both sides had built mechanisms that could produce confrontation, even if neither wanted a full-scale war that day.
Ingrid, bring in the economic layer. Reuters reported WTI crude futures rose as much as 3% after renewed hostilities. At 22:15 GMT, Reuters had WTI up $2.37, or 2.5%, at $97.18 a barrel. What is the market seeing?
The market is seeing uncertainty in the only place it really cannot afford uncertainty. Hormuz handles roughly a fifth of globally traded oil and liquefied natural gas. Markets can absorb many ugly headlines if physical flows remain predictable. What they cannot easily price is a waterway that is officially open, militarily contested, diplomatically disputed, and dependent on armed passage.
So the price move is not just about today's exchange.
No. It is about the risk premium around tomorrow's ship movement. If companies believe that passing Hormuz requires U.S. naval protection, Iranian permits, or both, then insurance costs rise, schedules slip, and some operators wait. If a tanker or LNG carrier is hit, the market will not wait for a perfect legal reconstruction of who fired first. It will price disruption. And the market risk is not only the price of crude. It is insurance, shipping delays, refinery planning, and the fear that one ambiguous exchange can suddenly make every tanker route through Hormuz look repriced.
The sanctions also escalated today.
They did. The U.S. Treasury and OFAC announced designations involving Iraqi oil sector and militia-linked figures and entities. Treasury named Iraq's deputy oil minister, Ali Miraj al-Badali, among those sanctioned, alleging schemes that benefited Iran and Iran-backed militias. That matters because Washington is not treating the Hormuz crisis as only a naval problem. It is pairing military pressure with financial pressure across the regional network that supports Iran.
And the Lebanese front is part of the same negotiation system.
Reuters reports Israel said it killed a Hezbollah Rudwan commander in Beirut's southern suburbs, described as the first Beirut area strike since the Lebanon ceasefire. Reuters also reports that a halt to Israeli strikes in Lebanon is a key Iranian demand in negotiations. That means the Hormuz deal is not just about ships. It is linked to sanctions, Iraq, Hezbollah, Israel, and the wider question of whether regional fronts can be separated or whether they move together.
Elena, is that the diplomacy trap?
It is. The U.S. proposal reportedly offers a limited framework and a 30-day window. That may be the only politically possible starting point. But Iran's demands reach beyond the strait. They include sanctions relief, guarantees, and pressure on Israel's regional operations. Washington may want to compartmentalize. Hormuz here, nuclear talks there, Lebanon somewhere else. Tehran may see all of it as one pressure system.
That brings us to attribution, because listeners deserve clarity without false confidence. Here is what we can say tonight. CENTCOM says three U.S. destroyers were attacked by Iranian missiles, drones, and small boats while transiting Hormuz. CENTCOM says U.S. forces intercepted the threats and hit Iranian military nodes in response. Iran says the United States violated the ceasefire first by targeting vessels and civilian areas. Reuters, AP, and Al Jazeera report competing official narratives. The Iranian claims we have reviewed are not independently verified. The U.S. battlefield account should also be treated as an official claim where independent verification is limited.
And what we do not know is just as important. We do not have a confirmed public accounting of all battlefield effects. We do not have independent verification of who initiated the exchange. We do not have a final diplomatic statement terminating the ceasefire. Cleaning up uncertainty would make the story simpler, but it would make it less true.
The phrase I keep coming back to is open fire. The ceasefire may not be formally dead, but it is under open fire. That distinction matters. It leaves room for diplomacy, but it also tells the truth about the waterway.
And the military risk compounds if both sides believe their legal story is defensive. The United States says it is protecting warships and commercial passage. Iran says it is responding to violations and defending sovereignty. Two defensive narratives can still produce an offensive spiral.
So what are we watching over the next 24 to 48 hours?
First, whether Iran accepts, rejects, or continues reviewing the U.S. framework. Silence matters too. A formal rejection would be dangerous, but a long pause while fighting continues can be dangerous in a different way.
Second, whether there are additional attacks on U.S. or commercial vessels, and whether the U.S. response stays tied to immediate threats or expands to broader Iranian military infrastructure. The difference between retaliation and campaign can disappear gradually.
Third, vessel movement, insurance rates, and LNG flow from Qatar. LNG disruption would ripple quickly into Asia and Europe. I would also watch whether shipping companies treat U.S. protection as reassurance or as a signal that the route is too risky.
And I would add one more. Language. Does Washington still describe the ceasefire as intact? Does Tehran describe talks as alive? Do intermediaries keep channels open? In a crisis like this, the words do not stop the missiles, but they can keep the next doorway from closing. Tonight, Hormuz is not just a passage between the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman. It is the place where law, force, energy, and diplomacy are colliding. CENTCOM says U.S. destroyers came under attack and responded. Iran says the United States violated the ceasefire first.
Reuters reports the fighting has thrown the ceasefire into doubt while Iran reviews a U.S. proposal. Oil prices moved, sanctions widened, the Lebanon front pressed into the talks. The ceasefire can survive on paper while failing at sea. That is the warning. And if it fails at sea for long enough, paper may not matter. Sources for this episode include U.S. Central Command, the U.S. Treasury, OFAC, Reuters, AP, BBC, Al Jazeera, and Mehr News Agency. This has been The Synthetic Lens. I'm David Carver. We'll keep watching The Strait.